Hi, everyone, and welcome to the first ever episode of the Context Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Langsdorf. Today, we're meeting up with Natalie Ann Valentine, who is a burlesque performer, a playwright, a dramaturg, and a sexy trash raccoon. We're excited to have her on the show today. Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Context, a dramaturgy podcast where we look at the dramaturgy of everything that is awesome. And today, I'm very happy that we are joined with Natalie Valentine, who is a theater practitioner, which includes being a playwright and a dramaturg and an actor. And the reason we're talking to her today is because she's also a maker of burlesque performance in that she performs and creates and dramaturgs the whole affair. Natalie, welcome to the show.
Hooray. Hi.
Hi. So you and I know each other. We're mostly internet friends. I know.
Yes, it's true.
We've been in the same room many a time. I don't know if we've actually had a conversation where we're looking at each other's faces and saying things.
Yeah, I feel like I have this thing where I just like stalk people on Twitter and I'm like, well, I want that person to be my friend. So I act like we're already friends.
Yeah, it's a good system. The first time I saw you was at the National New Play Showcase in Florida. What was that? At the end of 2015. I was there working. I was the communications consultant for the National New Play Network at the time. And you were there with Forum Theater. Is that right?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Associate member. I remember. I didn't know who you were, but I'm like, that girl's cool. I want to be her friend.
It's always because of my hair.
It might have been your dress and it might have been your tattoo. I don't know. It was, but there was something about you that I'm like, I should find out who she is. And then I think we sort of incidentally became Twitter friends. I'm like, oh, it's that girl I like.
I'm so much cooler on the outside than the inside.
That's okay. Me too. I think that the internet's the best place to befriend someone. And we had actually lived close to each other. We were both DC theater people. But this is my life regret with our friendship is that I only became aware of you as a physical entity who lived in my same geography right about the same time that I moved to Southern California. So there was a little overlap. There were a couple of like Facebook events that I'm like, I am interested in going to this thing Natalie's doing and I cannot get my act together to go there. Now I'm going to move to California and never see her in person. So that's the history of our friendship. And from my perspective.
I feel like that's about the same. I'm just like, well, you know, here's my Twitter friend. Let's be best friends.
I love it. So I am really interested in a couple of perspectives that you have. So right before we started the call, you were saying you identify more as a playwright than as a dramaturg. Is that sum things up for you? Like, have you identified as a dramaturg in the past?
I feel like it's sort of incidentally or in conjunction with playwriting. My philosophy towards theater and also kind of everything is the concept of I want to write the book that doesn't exist on the shelf. I've never been one for like waiting for things to occur. I'm just like, oh, well, I want to do this thing. Let me produce an evening of it. Yeah, so I think, you know, I've always done, I've been interested in dramaturgy. The program at my, the college where I graduated had a pretty solid dramaturgy department. That was the University of Maryland.
College Park?
Yes, College Park with Phaedra Carpenter. And I've always just been interested in context, which is great podcast name, by the way.
Oh, thanks. It took me a really, really long time to come up with it.
It's delightful. And so just kind of like crafting a story, and where it fits into the world and like how a book fits into a shelf. So I feel like I'm an accidental dramaturg.
I feel like most of us are, at least the people who are in my circle, because I'm also an accidental dramaturg. Okay. So here's something that I want to try to get in the habit of asking everyone, cause I think that there are going to be a lot of different answers. Tell me, what is your best definition of dramaturgy?
Ooh, fun. I would say it's curating the story, or I know your podcast is named this, but I do feel like context is the most important word. It's how does this story fit into the world? How can we understand it? And how can we help someone understand it? And that helping someone on that journey, to me, is, or not someone, but many people, an audience, the actors, the everyone on the team, how can we help them understand the journey? And that can be a bumpy road, which is where the dramaturg comes in, I think.
Awesome. I like it. I like all of that. And I am fully on board. As you can tell, I'm also in favor of creating context.
Yes.
Cool. Well, thank you. So the thing that I want to talk to you about today is your work as a burlesque performer and how you dramaturg your performances. So first, can you tell me about how you got into burlesque?
So again, accidentally.
Great. Some of the best things happen.
It's true. I feel like everything. I'm like, oh, well, I've been doing this for several years. I guess I do this now. But with burlesque, I've actually only been doing it more seriously for about 2 years. I've always been kind of peripherally interested in it. I was way too shy to do it before, like, recently. I was in a show with Pinky Swear, The Last Burlesque by Steve Spotswood.
Oh, cool! I like Pinky Swear. I like Steve Spotswood. I do not know solid... The Last Burlesque by him, but I bet I would have loved that show.
It's really delightful, and we had... I played a character named Cordy, and she was kind of like a smaller character. She was not a burlesque performer in the show. She was like a stagehand or kitten type character. But I did get to have a routine in the show, and it wasn't like stripping or anything. It wasn't even a reverse burlesque, but it was like a kind of like a punk rock song, and I was like trying on costume pieces and taking them off, but it was all like this really wonderful performance for the audience. It was just exhilarating. It was like the first time I'd kind of tasted the way that feels, where my body wasn't an apology. Which I'll get into later. Is like the reason I do burlesque. Is because I've had to apologize for my body for so long, being a woman, being a disabled person, because I'm blind, partially, and suffer from mental illness. Getting tangential because I'm having feelings.
That's okay. Anyway. Do what you gotta do. feelings are important. Feelings are the context of the whole damn thing.
It's so real.
Oh man. Okay. I just said damn. So now officially the band-aid is off.
Guys, rip off the damn band-aid.
It's the damn band. It's not the worst word in my arsenal, but right before we started recording, I was telling Natalie like to not feel like she needs to censor herself, because so far I've recorded two podcasts. They've been clean. I'm not the kind of person who records very clean podcasts, so I don't like. I don't know. I don't want to set a precedent of this being polite. And I am also, Natalie, intentionally kind of derailing a little bit so that you can process your feelings and have them. And now I'm going to come back to you and ask you more questions. So you got into
yes, I got into burlesque through The Last Burlesque, the theater performance. And through that, I'd seen a couple of shows. The one that I remember most vividly is actually a Tennessee Williams burlesque show.
What?
It was amazing. It was my first proper burlesque show, and I was like, how is this possible? I did not know this thing could be so nerdy.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Specifically nerdy. It was Beer Baron. I don't know who produced it. I'm not sure if they're in town anymore, but they had like...
And by in town, you mean in D.C.?
Yes, in town. Yes, in D.C. So it was, they had acts like Blanche DuBois acts and Stanley, and it was just, and the host was Tennessee Williams.
Oh my God.
It was delightful. And it kind of opened like that. It was very lucky that that had been, or that that was the first show that I saw, because it kind of married those worlds so beautifully.
That sounds amazing. In fact, I can't, now that you've said it, I can't imagine why all Tennessee Williams plays aren't burlesque shows.
Yeah.
It's like the thing that's been right in front of me this whole time.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly how I felt. I was sitting there being like, what? How? I didn't know that this world existed, and like, how dare it exist without me? I need to get involved. I remember looking down at them, like it was like a whatever production group that was. They had like, oh, here's our next couple shows, and I didn't see this one, but they did have a Sondheim burlesque show shortly thereafter.
Oh my.
And I was like, the world is opening so many doors that at once, and I'm having feelings again, and this is great.
Had you ever seen a burlesque performance not like, before that?
I'd seen them in pieces of other shows or in the context of like straight theater or musical theater, but I'd never seen a actual burlesque show at a bar or a
right.
So you probably burlesque performance.
You'd seen Gypsy a few times, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm a total musical theater geek, so yeah.
as a slight tangent, just so that you know that I'm fully invested in this. When I was 7, I want to say, I saw Gypsy for the first time with my grandma and grandpa. Uh-huh. Shortly before he passed away. I loved it so much. And my grandma, you know, knew this story, knew this world. And she, you know, she gave me all the context going in, mm-hmm. like, and framed it as it's the story. It's really the story about her mother, her pushy stage door mother, and like that relationship. Mm-hmm. So we get home, and like, what do you think? I'm like, I really liked it. When I grow up, I want to be a stripper.
Amazing.
And then there is, I mean, there may still, my grandpa had just gotten, you know, one of those over the camera mm-hmm. home video recorders that's like the size of a professional news crew. Got all like into like the costume trunk, you know, wearing way more clothes mm-hmm. than I ever wear. And then I did like my first 7-year-old strip routine. And this, I think, beautiful. Is kind of foundational to my existence. When I grew up, I want to be a stripper. And my grandma and grandpa were like, that's amazing. I can't wait until we bring you back to your mom and tell her what you learned today.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
But all of my burlesque viewing has been in the legitimate theater space. Mm-hmm. With a fascination of like, what is that when you take it into somewhere that's less polished and more like mm-hmm. actually burlesque and not part of an artistic season that's been right. planned.
Well, it's a lot more fun. Mm-hmm. It's usually a lot more naked.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. One of the, I think the most interesting differences is the audience. I did a mini lecture with some friends at a fundraiser here in DC. And it was like Burlesque 101. It was like just a couple, it was like 20, 30 minutes of history. And then we filled the rest of the performance with acts, like with burlesque acts.
Cool. And
yeah, it was really neat. And it's kind of, I'm a beginner at burlesque, only been like 2 years or so. So it's kind of neat to take what I'd learned and put that into a theatrical setting, because we did have to educate the audience on how a burlesque audience differs from like your blue hair crew, a bunch of white people being old in a theater.
Well, tell me what that is, because as you know, I've seen most of my burlesque with right. my grandparents.
Right. I think the biggest difference, at least with like kind of like your standard theater that you think of, is how the audience is engaged. Not some burlesque performers do have interaction with the audiences, some don't. It really just depends on like the evening and the place and the performer. But so the one of the key things with burlesque is the tease. So if you want someone to like, you want the audience to like yell and scream, and you like slide something off your shoulder, you just do it a little bit, and the louder the audience is, the more they'll get to see.
That's
part of like the game and the fun of the interaction of that night is you get to participate as an audience member. And you really directly get to engage with joy and fun, and you feel like you are friends with that performer, or not even maybe not friends, but you're in the same world and you have fun together. And it does feel like something you are doing together.
So when you talk about being in the same world, does the audience come in with an understanding of what that world is, or do you as a performer or producer need to build that world for them?
It's a little yes and with that one. Mm-hmm. I think once you walk into a specifically burlesque or variety show, a lot of the times when I perform, I do it with the Manic Pixie Nightmares, which is a troupe in DC, and we often have guest performers that are drag kings or comedians or various other kinds of like variety acts. Mm-hmm. And I think being in that community of that room, of that show, there are lots of people who have been to a lot of burlesque shows and they kind of know how to act. But at the beginning of every show we do, we have burletiquette, which we talk about the rules, like for safety of the performers and the audience members, which for us, for instance, is you can't take pictures unless you've been specifically asked by a performer to take pictures because we all have jobs and some of them are not okay with, you know, tits on Instagram. and then there's tipping, which is when you typically crunch up your dollar bill and you throw it on the stage so the kitten can come collect it, and we talk about that. And what we did at this fundraiser thing that the fundraiser show that I mentioned, we had people do like your test scream and just like, kind of like reminding people. It's like planting a joke at the beginning of a dark comedy or a tragic comedy where it's like, okay, you have permission to laugh. You have permission to be involved in this world. And specifically theater audiences are like, no, I have to be quiet. We have to sit quietly and watch this capital T theater and I can't engage with it until afterwards or during intermission when I have permission to have thoughts and, you know, things like that.
Like if I'm not sitting quietly and while you're taking your top off and then clapping politely when you're done taking your top off, it might distract you from the important work of taking your top off. And I want to respect your space, your mental space. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, please scream. Screaming makes you respect. It makes me feel like you respect me. And it's just so much more fun. And you do kind of have to introduce the rules of the world, I think. But people get it. If you've never been to a burlesque show before, but you're in a room with people who have, you get it. Mm-hmm. You see what's up and you just join in on the fun and the kind of thrill of being able to participate with consent in the performance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That seems that consent piece seems important and crucial. Particularly as I think about the difference between burlesque and just like a strip club. Do you before I start pontificating, do you want to speak to what you think are the key differences between doing a burlesque show and just like straight up stripping, but with really good costumes?
I don't really know if I'm in a super good position to talk about that. I have never been to a strip club. And I know that they're very different worlds. A lot of the burlesque performers that I know refer to themselves as sexy workers because there is a huge difference between like stripping at a strip club and the challenges that carries with it and the social mores and all that bullshit. And being able to say like, oh, you know, not don't post posts on Instagram and all that stuff. Right. There's definitely some privilege, more privilege with that comes with burlesque performance, or often, I can't say that as like a broad brush, than sex work, for instance. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. I don't know if it's appropriate for me to speak on it since I've never been a stripper at a strip club.
I get it. Yeah. Okay, I'm picking up what you're laying down. It's something that I really do wonder about. And I've had when I was in college as an undergrad, I had a few of my theater friends went to go work in the local Long Beach strip clubs. As dancers because they had dance backgrounds and, you know, basically when was this? Maybe 2003-ish. It was before there was really a burlesque scene. And also, even if there had been one, that wasn't going to pay the rent. But I think
that's so true.
The thought going into it was like, oh no, this is fine. This is dancing. This is theater. Like I don't care. Like I'm fine with having people see my boobs. Like that's not a problem. But then just being like so immediately, like, morally sunk mm-hmm. by it. I'm thinking of two friends in particular that were like, oh, this is a good way to make a little money. Also, I'm a classically trained ballerina, so right. I'm going to do the best moves. I'm like, oh, nope, not me. But then there's the reality of, like, okay, well, rent still needs to get paid, mm-hmm. and I'm still very poor. And so I think that knowing that that was something that they could go back to if times got tight was always like this kind of lure, like, oh, do I want to start stripping again? I hated it, but there's mm-hmm. money in it. And you don't really get that same feeling with theater, like, oh, do I want to do another play?
Right.
Well, it'll make me rich, but yeah. Anyway, yeah, I think there's a lot there in terms of class and economics and consent mm-hmm. and just like how much are you in charge of how you're presenting yourself? But apart from saying I wanted to be a stripper when I was seven, I also do not have experience in getting paid for that work. And something I've heard burlesque performers mention is that it can be a really expensive hobby because you're making your own costumes. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. Oh, it is very expensive. Or it can be. I mean, most people, if not all, you just are creative and you make your own costumes and things like that. But it's definitely something you do, at least in probably... So from my experience, you do more because you love it mm-hmm. Than because you're making money, though you can make money. I'm a hobbyist, I would say. I do make, you know, I get paid for the gigs that I do. But, you know, there are people who dedicate their whole lives to it and can support themselves with it. That was one of the things that was when it was first kind of in America, you could do like the burlesque route around the country and women could support themselves without a man, not attached to like land or name or whatever. They could burlesque performers could support themselves.
And what era is this?
I would have to look it up.
That's okay. But not like 1985. We're talking no. about the old days of the Orpheum circuit and like the vaudeville tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm talking about that era. Yeah, and you'd kind of just be able to support yourselves. So for me, I like doing weird burlesque. One of the big distinctions, I guess, is like kind of like who you are as a burlesque performer. Do you do something more classic that is like that vaudeville, and you think of like feathers and all that stuff? And graceful and beautiful. And I'm not like that. I like to incorporate pieces of that classic burlesque, but I do something that is that's called neo-burlesque, which is like the resurgence around the 90s, I think I would say, which is like kind of the, hey, there's this cool thing that has been happening, but like, look at this, we're doing it again, we're doing it differently. So for instance, the last act I did was a raccoon. I was a raccoon stripper and playing in a trash can.
That's awesome!
And my whole costume was made out of trash. Literally, like, trash bags as, like, a little bustle. I had, like, a corset made of duct tape and, like, receipts and cereal boxes. Oh, no.
Sorry. My podcast studio is my living room / kitchen table. And I live on a busy street in Los Angeles, and sometimes the fire truck needs to come by. So that's just, part of how I, your podcast host, am a woman of the people.
That's true.
Cool. So trash bags and raccoons. I like
yes,
it.
Yes, the Sylvia Trash story. Although I guess I should say my beloved name is Sylvia Trash.
This makes so much more sense. I did not know why you were Sylvia Trash on the internet. Yes. I just thought...
That's my burlesque name. I mean, it is, but it's also my burlesque name. So I'm Sylvia Trash because I love Sylvia Plath, actually. So my like highbrow, lowbrow bullshit burlesque. So I also have like a hemlock routine that's like very sad and graceful and mournful. My lonely hemlock, and then I have the trash raccoon, which I think Sylvia Plath would like. I think she would appreciate that a lot.
Uh-huh.
I always, whenever someone comes up to me, it's like, oh my God, I love your burlesque name. I'm like, you and I would be friends because we have a very specific brand of humor.
Yes. I mean, I did, I had assumed that Sylvia Trash as a Twitter handle was a play on Sylvia Plath, and I was into that. But knowing that there's a trash raccoon who takes her clothes off that goes with that persona is like A++ would friend again.
Yes. Oh yeah, it's a really fun act. That's just like, and it's actually a fan dance. I made fans, like, again, like you when you imagine burlesque, I think a lot of people have that conjured idea of like the very beautiful feather fans. And so I made them out of trash, like I said, cereal boxes and like whatever, like Trader Joe's freezer food that I had that week. I just cut it up and like stuck it together and sprayed glitter on it and stapled feathers to it. And so she, this character, this raccoon, discovers these fans in the trash can on stage and does a fan dance with them. And it's all to Take Out the Trash by the Mighty Giants.
This is my favorite thing.
It's very dumb. I love it. But I really like the like kind of ridiculous aspect of burlesque, of neo-burlesque, which is like a story on stage. And this is kind of where the dramaturgy comes in, I think, for me especially, is the creating like an arc of a story within a show that has a theme, or and how can we fit it into that or not? Can I make up a new act, or do I have one to retailer or just use? And how can I tell the story in 3.5 minutes or however many of this character? And so it's like mini playwriting, sort of.
That's cool. I had not ever thought about a burlesque act as being mini playwriting, but yeah. I was thinking of it's kind of as a musical sketch comedy in a way, but but you are so right, because it sounds like it does, it like follows a narrative, and so and well, yeah. Yes.
For me, and I think there are, again, there are different ways to approach it, and not everyone does that, and there's no need to. That tends to be just what I like. I just like having a whole arc of a story, and like a beginning and an end, and you can really come along. I find that I like seeing these acts, too. It's what draws me in, is like kind of going along on this whole ride with the performer as they do something. And that's kind of what makes it fun for me, is like curating these like mini stories, and you're gone and you're done after 3 minutes, and you can go off and watch the rest of the show. But I've really fallen in love with like these little silly characters that I've created. And like that for me is the biggest draw, is these little mini characters. And again, like I said before, this like lack of the need, or not the need, there is never a need. To apologize for one's body, but the urgency I feel to apologize for my body, just like navigating the world. Yeah, I think there's something to that. I keep coming back to it, even though it doesn't make me a ton of money. There's just something about that little story creation and the friends that I've made doing this in the community, and like the actual diversity of the crowd. Any given burlesque show that I go to in DC is more diverse and inclusive and like reflective of the community than any play that I've ever seen.
Right. Oh, that's so cool and fascinating. And I find that with comedy theater too, because I do a lot of sketch comedy and stand up and that sort of thing. And even if you have to pay to go, even if it's a $12, you know, ticket, everybody's there, you know, of all economic classes and all types of people. And and in some cases it's specifically the younger people that capital T theater feels like they just don't want to go out. They just want to stay home on their phones all the time. But not so.
It's true.
That's really cool and very interesting, and I gotta go find some burlesque. I know that there is some burlesque here in Los Angeles, and
definitely.
And apart from not finding you in person to be friends with you before I left DC, my other big DC regret is not making it to, was it called Wonderland Ballroom? Was that the burlesque house on H Street?
Oh, what was it? I think that's the bar. Was it Palace? What is it called?
Palace of Wonders. Yes.
Yes, Palace of Wonders. Okay, yes.
Wonderland Ballroom, I think you could still go to and get a drink. Yes. Palace of Wonders was within walking distance from my house, but I just couldn't stay up late. Yeah. And it was like one of those, like, well, it's right down the street, so I'm sleepy tonight, but I could go check it out another night. It will always be there.
And then it went away.
Mm-hmm. Sleepiness is a hell of a thing.
God, it's so true. Yeah, it's heartbreaking. I've been hearing stories about it and all that. Like, now that I do burlesque, I'm like, but wait, can I time travel? Because that would be really neat.
So is there a dedicated space for the burlesque-ish arts in D.C. now? Or do you go to, is it wherever we'll have the performers?
It's really wherever we'll have the performers. There are, like, certain bars that, like, do it more frequently. The Beer Baron comes to mind, for instance, here in D.C. But, yeah, there is not a dedicated space for it. It's just where you can find a stage with decent enough lighting and a bar and enough room for people to sit and watch a show.
Very cool. Do you have any shows that are on the books that you're that you're preparing for, or do you tend to pull out the same? Well, first of all, what do you have coming up? And second of all, do you tend to refine these acts, or do you tend to hear a theme and be like, I need my trash raccoon to do something different, or I need the trash raccoon to not be there so that I can bring in my unicorn hobo?
I feel like it's more the latter. Because I'm new. I've only been doing this for a little while. So it kind of, a themed show is a chance to make something new, which is really, really exciting and fun. Like, for instance, I have a show on November 1st, with the DC Girly Show. And that's at Beer Baron. Yeah, I can send you more details about that one, but it's a food-themed show. So my task currently is to find some dumbass food-related story for myself that I can make an act to, and it might be pumpkin spice something, turkeys, I don't know.
Because it's November! Oh, great.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to try to get this episode up on the internets in October, giving people plenty of time to get to the Beer Baron. Yeah. Clear your calendar November 1st.
Yeah. It's gonna be naked.
To go see Natalie be naked. Amazing. So was there an emotional hurdle getting into burlesque from, you know, because I think so many women, myself included, really can relate to this, like, apologizing for your physical presence, for your body, and for the space you're taking up, and you know, this is more than I would like. It's like there's just a fair amount of shame in just existing as a human woman, particularly if there are any other identity markers that are not, like, cis, white, straight.
Right.
All, you know, whatever. And I think, like, it's one of those things that I've always, like, sort of aspired to do. Mm-hmm. You know, from the time I was 7 years old, I always wanted to take my clothes off in front of people. But there's a certain, like, a modesty. Well, what comes off as modesty in its more virtuous form, but is really just like deep shame. You know, like, yes, I don't
exactly
want to see my belly. Yeah, actually, my belly's fine. I don't want anybody to see my thighs. So, yeah. When you were getting into it, were you just like, "Oh, hot damn, this is the place," or was it an emotional journey to get there?
Oh, both. It's fucking terrifying, and there's your curse word.
Yes, all right, explicit label. It's doing it great. The band is really off now, because I've said damn, I think, twice, but now I'm going to say fuck my. Some more. All right.
Well, okay, so the first time I did it, I had, like, a Tinkerbell act, and it was, like, very fun. It was, I was, like, playing with the concept of applause, and how, you know, fairy, you need to, if she died, you have to clap her back to life, and all that stuff. It was a really fun routine. I was, like, just floored with terror. I was like, holy shit, I am going to be really naked in front of these people.
So your first one, you're like, that it's all coming off, or, you know, enough of it's coming off. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, kind of went balls to the wall, I guess.
Do you have the option of being, for your first one, like, I'm going to show more shoulder than is appropriate, or, or like, do you have sort of, when you sign up for these gigs, can you opt to be less nude and have it still fit? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can do whatever. I mean, really, it's up to you. And that's, again, one of the freeing parts of it is you can do whatever you want. Typically, like, by law, is you have to wear, like, pasties over your nipples and some kind of thong-like undergarment.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, and it varies from venue to venue. Some will need, like, more coverage on various locations. I went to, I think they had, like, black sparkly pasties, and, like, you can get really creative with it, but I did not. Because I was like, I'm going to be naked and scared.
Right.
And I walked off stage, and I was like, I'm so ashamed of myself. Why did I do that? I'm humiliated. I'm fat. I'm ugly.
Oh,
and that lasted,
no.
Like, I know. When I looked in the mirror they had backstage, and I was like, I cannot believe I put this body out there. And that left, it was like 10 seconds of just horror that I'd done that. And I'd chosen to put myself in that position with so much body hatred.
Like, I know this turns out okay, but I want to hug myself.
It does. I know.
Like, it's good. You're beautiful. Okay, keep going.
Well, I'm glad my narrative is working. But then I heard people screaming. And I was like, I'd picked up a costume piece as part of the act. And, like, I had a crumpled up dollar bill. And I was like, these people are with me. They are screaming my name, literally. And they threw money at me for this thing that I did with my body. And that was really remarkable, like that moment, that 11th second of being like, but they're still screaming my name at my debut, and they're my friends. These are people that I have, and strangers too, who are just, for the most part, they're just so happy to be there. And I know, obviously, it is not like this all the time, and I don't know what they were actually thinking. You know, I don't, but they were screaming my name and throwing money at me, so I am making some assumptions.
it's not too far of a leap,
right?
Like, this went well,
right? Exactly. And I, like, you know, so, and I know when I see a show, from being the person in the audience, I'm not like, wow, that person has extra or not enough in some body part. I'm like, this person is owning their shit on stage. They have the bravery to get up there and do it, whoever they are, whatever they are, however good they are. I'm still excited about it,
right?
I'm always with them. And it's just, there's so much joy there. And that's extremely, like, important. It is one of the most important parts, I think, is just getting up on stage and just it's like, you know, you're outside on a hot summer day and the sweat is dripping off you, and the shame oozes out of your pores and goes away. And you can just unapologetically be yourself on stage through your character or whatever thing you're doing, and people are just with you, and it's a community, and it's, you know, and it's best self. It's not always like this. Burlesque does have a lot of racism and sexism and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
In its past and present, but, like, in its best form, it is really joyful and community-based and loving and fun.
Oh, man, remember fun?
Yeah, sort of.
This is really great, first of all, and just so interesting. As I'm thinking about, like, my own gravitation towards stand up since I moved away from DC, I have pursued zero legitimate theater apart from my involvement with National New Play Network and Literary Managers and Dramaturgs of the Americas. But that is so script and research based, and very like, it takes me into a theater so seldom, because I feel like I don't have the spiritual fortitude for a serious story about serious things right now. But I still want that vulnerability and that human connection and that raw content, and stand-up comedy could do that, and I think burlesque sounds like it could do it with better music and costumes. So I think that's probably how I need to start booking my time, at least as a drinker and spectator, until I get the nerve to show my own tits.
It's great. It is so much fun.
Well, it seems really timely too. I mean, I know that there's always been a place for it, but lately, you know, everything in the real world is so oppressive right now. Like, I don't want to have to go sit nicely in an expensive theater seat and hear about something that was really important when the play was being developed 5 years ago. Like, take off your clothes and tell me a joke. God damn it.
That's something else that I wanted to talk about is the immediacy of burlesque. Mm-hmm. And drag is very similar, I think, in this as well. As like, you can be mad about something that morning, do a show about it, or do an act about it that night. The response time is so immediate, and I think there's so much in burlesque that theater needs and wants, even if it doesn't really know that it wants. Like, we think of like theater, and we're like, oh, I want this to be timely and immediate, and I want this to be like with parody and these other capital lettered words that I put on my website and my mission that I don't actually do.
Riling me up. Okay.
And then you can do them that night. So there's a show coming up, and I think it'll be before this goes out, but I still want to talk about it. The DC Weirdo Show, run by Dr. Torture. I know. She is just the most perfect human being. She's like an amazing, like, political activist and human, and she is doing a show, and I think it is being co-produced with a friend of mine who is a drag performer and burlesque performer, among other things, Phoenix King. They're doing a mental illness related show.
I want it.
I know. I can't wait to go. I'll be selling some of my poetry chapbooks there. And it's called Weirdos for Life, and it's all about being mentally ill in this world and what the fuck do we do about it. And that won't be all burlesque, but that there are burlesque performers in there. And I think that speaks to being able to handle a heavy subject like mental illness, because that shit sucks.
Right.
It's literally a killer, and being able to do it in this performing language that theater is not fast enough to do.
Yeah.
Like, I am a writer. We talked about earlier, like, I'm a playwright. I write very much about mental illness, and my experience with it. But I can't just do a show tonight, because things need to have readings, and we have to have feelings about them and take notes and rewrite.
You gotta get a lighting designer.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That takes time.
It's true. And then, you know, and there are things and there are reasons to say that it should do all those things. I'm not
sure.
You know,
there are absolutely
great things about that.
Theater's great. But that's how we know each other.
It's true. Exactly. But I think one of the things that I'm working towards right now, just in my theatrical and burlesque life, is how to marry these art forms. Especially in regards to these like really intense subjects and with immediacy, and with like the irreverent subversive thing that burlesque has. For instance, like, I learned how to eat fire from Dr. Torture the other night in my backyard, because she had her stuff and was like, hey, and she's a professional teacher and everything. She's like, hey, do you want to learn how to eat fire? And I was like, yes, I do. And so she taught me, in like, you know, 10 minutes, and I, you know, very beginner stuff, but still there was something to that, to like the, just being able to experience literally like fire eating, just because a person had the skills and the kindness to teach. There's something that theater doesn't have that. And like the immediacy that like life thing, I my journey, I think, is really figuring out how to marry them.
I love that. Natalie, there's so much here. I feel like we have just opened the can of fireworms.
It's so true.
I would really love to have you back on another time so that we can get into, the stuff that I had booked you to talk about in my mind was like, I wanted to hear your research process for your characters and a little bit of like, you know, sort of the theater history angle on burlesque. But this to me feels like a more important conversation and talking about the immediacy and the empowerment and all the feelings. And like where I can go see some right now. So will you come back another time to get into deeper nerd territory with me?
I am always interested in getting into deeper nerd territory.
Yes.
Meanwhile, I came on here to talk about my like nerdy research too.
And I don't want your nerdy research to go to waste. Well, I'm going to have really good show notes because, you know, dramaturgy. So one thing just before we totally like say for another time, can you talk me through how someone listening who might be like, this sounds awesome, how do I get started? How does that person get started if they only know burlesque from having seen Gypsy with their grandparents when they were seven? Mm-hmm. Where do you go to get involved in your local community?
I would say just type in like burlesque Google city. And just like go see stuff, like go see different various producing groups and people and talk to people afterward. I think there's something neat about burlesque and that you could just, it is often encouraged to just chat with your audience and like no pressure to, but I often at my shows will, and most of my groupmates and such do as well, just like stand at the bar and like live the best lives.
That's another interesting difference between how theater is usually done and how, you know, this and comedy, like it sounds like you can talk to somebody, like they're there and they're having a drink and they want to talk to you about what just happened. Like the post-show discussion is like baked in.
Yes, it's very much conversational, like they're with you as who they are, in as much as they can offer that night. And there have been nights of shows where I'm like, I don't feel like talking to people, so I don't. Or I want to hide this one costume piece that I can't take off. I have to like prep, and so I'm not going to go up before the show, but I'll be there afterward. And it's just, again, like that community thing is there. So I would say, so Google shows, like go check it out on whatever night of the week you want and just like linger, make friends. It's like a real post-show discussion where like nobody's telling you what to do or what to think.
I love it. Do you think at this point that most American cities or even Canadian and other English speaking countries, is there a place to go find that, or is it really reserved for these cities that do have vibrant theater communities like DC and Los Angeles?
Oh, I think it's everywhere. Awesome. I think that's one of the joys of it, one of the best parts of it, is that you can just like throw on a bikini and then take it off and you're doing burlesque, you know. Obviously there's more to it than that, but
try harder.
And you know, Ryan's done it or whatever. But I do think it can be anywhere. It's not contingent on theater at all. There are, I know some theater performers who also do burlesque, but the majority are not, they might have a theater background, maybe. Like they might've done it in high school, so they're interested in performing, but it's really, they're not super related. And I think some of the, like I know Richmond, for instance, has an incredible burlesque scene, but I don't think their theater scene is like enormous.
I know about Richmond as a really cool, just like as a cool town and a cool town for like music, and just like museums and culture. But yeah, you're right. There are a couple of named theaters, but it's not really a performing arts town in the way it, you know, like on the national scene.
Right. And I also think that like that, you know, theater is just as good there as it might be anywhere else. It is a more well-known thing. I tend to like theater in bars and living rooms. That's just like my jam.
Me too, because you could sit on couches when you do it there. And that's so true. Important.
Or like drink whiskey. It's great.
Drink whiskey. I have so many questions. So what I'm going to do instead of asking you 1,000 more questions, what else do you think people need to know about you and your work and how you navigate yourself in the world through burlesque or as a human?
I don't know, this keeps coming up, and I think it is just to the capital T theater thing is something that's on my mind, and I think it's just such bullshit. And what draws me to burlesque is being in the present moment with a performer, with the audience, with people who are sitting next to me. He always make friends with, I feel like, going to see a show. And just to, like, drop pretension and to not think that seeing a, you know, $400 theater ticket makes you a better theater practitioner.
Yeah.
I just think the classism is really interesting. And just there's a concept that money makes you better at theater, and, like, that is negative true. And yeah, I think to to, like, be joyfully wonderful and silly and dumb and have value there as well. So for instance, like, I have an act, as I mentioned before, this Lonely Hemlock, and I'm a plant, you know, that's my, the act is I'm a plant. I'm a poisonous plant who can't touch anyone because she'll kill them. And
oh, poor plant.
Right? See? But, like, I'm a plant and you can still have feelings about it.
I do.
And I think there's something really neat in that. And that is, like, the kind of stuff that I feel like that's how I navigate the world. And the theater is kind of exploring, like, the question of what else is there in a plant or a raccoon or whatever. And to just, like, be, I guess being interested is what I'm trying to get, is, like, be interested in the world you navigate, without giving yourself rules and barriers and, is this expensive enough for me to enjoy?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I have my call to action for, decision makers and board members who may be listening, as all your artistic directors get asked to step down for various reasons.
Yeah.
I'm really heartened by the job descriptions that I'm seeing to staff up these artistic positions where they're not looking for fancy people, because I think traditionally it's been that, you know, you read the job description, but at the end of the day, it's basically our ideal candidate will be very fancy, will have been born fancy and is still fancy to this very day.
And what that means is white. There'll be a straight white man.
Straight white man, or perhaps a person of color who was born into a wealthy family and in the white neighborhood. Maybe. Like, they'll consider it as a diversity hire.
Right. As a token.
And I always, for some reason, I always read those descriptions as, we're looking for someone very tall. I can't separate myself from it. Like, there was even one job description I read that I was like, oh my gosh, this is so great. They're looking for someone just like me, but taller and fancier. But someone else recommended me for the job, and I actually did end up interviewing, and it was a really heartening process because it was so much fancier than I was self-selecting out. And so I guess that's probably the more useful call to action is for those of us who don't feel fancy to apply, especially women and people of color and people with disabilities and people on any kind of fringe. Don't be a Kate. If you see that job description, you're like, I would be really good at this. You would be really good at it. You would be good at it. And don't let some dumbass take your job because he's got more money than you and is taller. Care how tall he is. Stupid.
Okay, stupid tall people. I'm tall.
I'm a tall woman, but, you know, I'm still not tall man tall.
Right. You know, this is just a funny story that kind of, like, on this height thing. My fiance, who is a cis man, is also, he's in my burlesque troupe as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. We are putting a duet act together to a cello cover of Despacito. It's amazing. But we were doing a group photo, and so he and I are the same height. And in a group photo, you're like, oh, tall people to the back, or short people to the front, or whatever. Well, I went to the back, and he went to the front. We're the same height. And I thought that was fascinating.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Like,
thanks, patriarchy.
Yeah, something to look into. All right. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Mm-hmm. Where can people go to find out more about your work?
So I have a Facebook page, which I probably don't update as much as I should, but that's this fine. Will give me a punch in the butt to do it. No, I don't know why it's not a kick in the butt, but there we are.
It's a weird butt punch.
You know, gotta get going somehow. So I have a Sylvia Trash Facebook page, and you just search Sylvia Trash, you'll find it. I don't think there are any others when I Googled it before. And then I also have my Instagram, which is where I kind of like, that's tends to be where I put like stupid cat pictures and like my event promo stuff. So that's, at sylvia.trash. Yeah. So follow me for burlesque and kitty cats and like, who knows, sad girl stuff.
I love it. Don't be sad. You're great. And I know that that's how you cure depression.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I'm better.
Oh my God. I'm so glad that I said it.
Yay. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Thank
what
you.
What a great podcast.
Oh, I'm so glad you like it. Thanks for being here. Stay tuned for more delightful episodes from delightful people like Natalie. Natalie Valentine, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the Context Podcast. You can learn more about our guest and the topics we covered today by heading to thecontextpod.com. That's thecontextpod.com for exclusive bonus content, including monthly episodes and secret Spotify playlists and some other cool stuff. Become a subscriber by going to patreon.com/thecontextpod. You can also follow along with our adventures on Twitter, where we are at ContextPod. And you can email us all your questions and episode ideas and thoughts and other things, just no dick pics, at thecontextpod@gmail.com. This episode of The Context was made possible by the 2018 Dramaturgy-Driven Grant from the Literary Managers and Dramaturgs of the Americas. Learn more about membership and how you could maybe get a grant for doing a thing you like at lmda.org/join. They don't require me to thank them, but it's a good group of folks, and I'm glad to be involved. They also don't require me to tell you that everything said on this podcast is my own opinion and not necessarily the views of LMDA, but that's also true. I don't think that LMDA would put dick pics in their closing bumper as a phrase to say. Anyway, that's all on me, not on them. Thanks for joining us.